Hello, everyone, and welcome to the PPC show brought to you by AdStage. I am Paul Wicker.
And I'm JD Prater.
And today is August 16th, and these are your top headlines in paid marketing brought to you from Denver, I think.
Denver.
You're in Denver?
I am. Do you remember that cartoon, Denver the Last Dinosaur?
The Last Dinosaur. He's my friend and a whole lot more. I'm making up.
Yeah. Something that was it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's where I am. Yep, in Denver, visiting some friends right now. So,
were you going to talk more about the dinosaur though, or you're just mentioning there was a cartoon?
No, I'm just mentioning it, just random. I just remembered, okay. Like, I just liked that song, you know. I remember watching that one. So, I bet everyone listening to this that's probably under the age of 30 has, well, yeah, 30 might be pushing it, maybe 35. It's like, what is Denver the Last Dinosaur?
It was a great cartoon with Denver, who is a surfing dinosaur, I believe. Yeah. Because in the intro, he's like surfing as that awesome music played. And that's pretty much all I remember about that cartoon. Don't remember anything else.
Yeah, and I only remember that one line.
Right.
I remember his the name rest was of the song.
Denver. It wasn't in Denver. Clearly because he's surfing, and there's not a lot of surfing in Denver.
Couldn't even tell you what kind of dinosaur. Maybe how like a brontosaurus, but yeah, I don't know.
He was green. That's all I remember. And you brought the little one, I won't call him a baby, little Jude, on the plane. And did he make, you know, a lot of noise and embarrass you?
No, he did fantastic. So 9 months old, and it's our first trip. We've avoided a lot of trips because we're scared. But we're like, no, we must take him. And so we got him on the plane, and he did absolutely fantastic. Fell asleep probably in the after 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and then slept in my arms, which gave me my arms were throbbing afterward, but for an hour 15. So that took up 2 hours. And then the last 15, we, you know, gave him a bottle so that way his ears would pop and he'd be nice and full. So he was well rested, full belly, can't lose.
Wow. Perfect. And it's you flew from Southern California to Denver. So it's not, what was that, 2 hours? It's not super.
Yeah, it was 2:10, 2:15.
Nice. So well, congrats.
Worked out really well. Yeah. For the first flight, we couldn't, we can only go downhill.
How nervous were you going to the airport about the experience?
Oh my gosh. You should have seen Meg. She's in the shower getting ready for the day. So I can talk a little bit about her without her hearing. She was so stressed. Her heart rate was way too high, elevated, because what ended up happening on the way to the airport, there were two car wrecks. So what normally took us 45 minutes took us 2 hours.
Oh my.
So we got to the airport 30 minutes before boarding. Thankfully, I have TSA pre-check and they gave it to Meg. I dropped them off at the front. I say go, because we were flying Southwest, when you have a kid, you have to provide a birth certificate in order to prove that he's under 2 years old. So you have to go to the ticket office and then go through security. I drop them off. I go and park. I go through the other terminal in San Jose because I know it's quicker. And I meet them at the gate 5 minutes before boarding.
Was there music playing, the Indiana Jones Temple of Doom music as you were running through the airport? As if it's not stressful enough to fly, you have crazy
zero time. Yeah, so we barely got water. We didn't get any food. So then you show up at altitude, dehydrated and hungry, and I immediately was like, I have a headache.
And you're holding your kid for an hour and a half with your arm falling asleep. Well, I think if you're flying for the first time with a kid, you had some good tips in there. A birth certificate on Southwest. See how useful this podcast is for people's lives.
Yeah. If traveling, best advice that we got, feed the kid on takeoff. That'll help them pop their ears, which is a lot of reasons why babies will cry, because their ears aren't popping. They don't know how. And so when their cabin starts pressurizing, so at takeoff, feed them. Put in a smaller nipple size for those parents that you'll understand. Put in a one. That way it's really hard for them to suck and it makes it take longer. And that really make it take 15. They're sucking really hard. Their ears will pop. And that takes up 15 minutes.
Maybe I should do that. I can't pop my ears. Do you do the yawn technique or the kind of weird jaw thing that some people
jaw thing.
Okay.
Jaw thing. Gum works too.
Yeah, I chew gum, but it doesn't really do much on the descent. And then my girlfriend's always because I have to yawn like try to even pop my ears. And she's like, so I'm over there, yawn, yawn, yawn. She's always like, you can't just do the thing. You have to yawn. I was like, I can't do it. Maybe I'll try sucking on a nipple with a,
there you go.
A number one.
A number one. A number one nipple. That's what you're looking for, Paul.
That's what I call my girlfriend anyway. So number one nipple. Fortunately, she never listens to this podcast. All right, moving on. So you watched something good on Netflix. You wanted to tell the good people about it.
Oh, The Great Hack. Paul, have you seen it?
No.
Go watch it. It's so good. It's about Cambridge Analytica and Facebook and Trump getting elected. These are like your favorite topics. Wow. I know they're my favorites. And it was actually pretty eye-opening for me because as someone that has like really followed this, I thought fairly close. No, like this movie gets really deep and they do a really good job of really going through the details of Cambridge Analytica and really unraveling a lot of things. Sure, you know, TLDR, they screwed with a lot of elections across the world, not just the UK and the US. The UK and the US was like their coming out party after they proved that they were really good in other countries. So,
All right. Sounds depressing, as usual, when I watch these docudramas. Is it a documentary or like a fictionalized reenactment type thing?
No, it's documentary. It follows a professor who is basically doing like a GDPR compliancy, saying, hey, Cambridge Analytica, I want the information that you have on me.
Right.
And you'll have to, you know, watch the documentary as it unfolds. And then they weave in other narratives of the election. They weave in data gathering. They weave in data rights or human rights, right? And so it's pretty good. It's pretty
good. I'll put it on the list. I watched Chernobyl. So that was has nothing with ads, but Chernobyl on HBO is excellent. It also is just terrifying about, you know, if you're into like Russians hacking elections and like the incompetence of the Russian, especially communist government. Watching Chernobyl is like the most frustrating thing ever, and it makes you really dislike communist Russia. And great news, like this week, Russia was testing a nuclear weapon and had an accident, and there was a radiation leak, and all the news coming out of Russia is like identical to what just happened in the Chernobyl documentary about how like basically their line is just everything's fine, no need to evacuate. There's just a fire at the you know reactor. Meanwhile, the reactor had like exploded and crazy things happened. Radiation sickness and everybody's like gonna die, and everyone's just like things are fine. And like half the people just convince themselves things are fine because their boss said things are fine, and they're like, but there's radioactive material on the ground, and they'd be like, that can't be radioactive material, and they're like, but we see it, and they're like, it can't be, and then they're like, okay. It's not. Now we'll tell everyone it's not. It's crazy. If you have
HBO, but I'm melting. I'm melting right now. No, no, you're not.
My skin is literally falling off. All those. I mean, I was thinking that a few times because there are points like they, you know, firefighters went to fight the fire at this blown open reactor, and they're like, you know, burning like not from fire, from like touching stuff, and it's like, aren't you looking around like, wait a minute? I know somebody said this is safe, but Bob over there is like skin is boiling. Anyway. So watch that. There you go. We have a little bit of a pop culture recommendations. Speaking of Cambridge Analytica, Facebook keeps getting into these problems with privacy and leaking data. This week, it's all about transcribed audio messages. In this case, it's kind of unfortunate for them because they're just doing the same thing everyone's been doing. We've been bringing this up like every week. It was Google, you know, getting in trouble for this, where they're paying third-party contractors to listen to the audio messages that you send to your, you know, Google device. Apple does it. Amazon does it. Facebook does it. And one by one, all the contractors are like, you know, whistleblowing, like we're infringing on people's rights and listening to these messages. So this is just Facebook getting caught doing the same thing as everybody else.
Yeah, this one's tough. I mean, again, you're 100% correct. Everyone's doing it, but I liked that these contractors felt that their work was unethical because Facebook hadn't disclosed to users that third parties may review their audio, right? And I was like, even if they did, it's in the T's and C's that everyone just says, yep, sounds good, submit, and you could bury that. So Facebook, if you're listening, just go bury it and you'll be fine. No one's reading those things.
Or you can do Amazon add in an opt-out. So you can, somewhere in some setting, you can opt out of human review when you use Alexa. But for those people who really care. And then you wonder, like, how does this story even come about? There's really contractors out there, like, because at the core of this is a very like reasonable thing to do, right? You're using human review of like your machine learning stuff to make sure that it's accurate. So it started as something that doesn't sound very dramatic or like infringing on privacy. Like these people are talking to Apple and Amazon like a human. So don't you think someone's listening? But maybe you just assume no one listens because you're talking to like a recording. But anyway, maybe now it seems obvious, but when this first started, it doesn't. Either way, Facebook's in hot water for that. So once again, they're in the news for something negative. Although they're making money hands over fist in this election cycle. Wowzers.
This is so much money. I mean, this is insane. Like just like pouring through this. So a couple of things that are pretty interesting in this regard. So they're kind of two articles going hand to hand. So a lot of Democrats, they're flooding Facebook with ads, right? They're paying a ton of money to get these new donors because the September debates are coming up. And to qualify, I didn't know this, so this is pretty interesting for those listening. To qualify for the debates, you have to have like one or two things. One of those things either being 130,000 individual donors, and that can be even just a dollar, right? Even if you just pledge a dollar. So 130,000. Or you have to hit 2% in four polls. So you have to be trending at the 2% mark of, you know, where you are in these four polls. So before, it was 1% in three polls and only 65,000 individual donors. But this, so everything just doubled for the September debate. So they are going gangbusters on the spend. But you know what? Trump is still outspending them. This is what was absolutely crazy. Please go read the show notes. Like, click on this one. Whenever they were looking this up, this is going from May 2018 to July 2019. They analyzed over 500,000 Facebook ads. Trump is spending $16.5 million. Second, Beto at $8.9 million, which most of that money was going for his Senate race. Then Tom Steyer, the billionaire. Then Gillibrand. So if you took one, two, three, the top four Democrats, it's still doesn't equal what Trump is paying.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's, you know, the season has
so much money.
Well, there's like 20 candidates. So if you add up all their spend, I bet it's probably more than Trump, which is, you know, of course, Trump's the only one kind of campaigning for on the Republican side. So I'm not super surprised by that. Number two, it is funny that they added. So after last election, when the DNC was like really pushing Hillary, and then, you know, there's all the scandal around how they like, you know, decided it would be Hillary and Bernie was essentially like shut out. And I don't know, regardless of where you stand on that issue, the DNC this time was like, we are not going to do that. We're going to make it super fair and open and all these candidates, but they need some way of like keeping people out because you can't just have 1,000 people in your debate. So they came up with this concept of how many donors do you have? To try to like reward grassroots folks who can't get in these national polls because people argue, well, I can't get in the poll because I don't have any support. I can't get any support because I can't get in the poll. So now they have this donor. You need to have donors. So I was looking, they have like the cost per donor costs that these campaign, you know, digital teams are paying. So they're paying between $50 and $200 per donor, but the donors only donate a dollar. So they're spending, you know, 200 to get a dollar. But of course, the value of these donors is not the revenue. They're happy to lose $199 per donor. What they're paying for is access to the next debate. So which has a lot higher of a value than the donor. But it does have this like upside down effect where they're even like paying people to be donors. Somebody said they're actually like paying $50 to donate a dollar to the campaign.
So yeah, that's probably cheaper than running Facebook ads.
Right. Well, and I've seen them. I've seen a bunch. Gillibrand is spending a ton of money because she's not doing very well in the polls and she needs donors and she can't get to the minimum requirement. So she's trying to spend her way out of it. I mean, it's just like we all do in paid all the time, right? Like paid is a great lever to turn on really quickly and get really fast results. And, you know, you need to do content and organic and build an audience and have a quality product, but all that takes time. And if you have a debate coming up and you need instant results, welcome to paid marketing. Google and Facebook are standing by to take your money and deliver you traffic, and in this case, donors.
That's right. It sounds like they're taking that TikTok approach from last week's podcast.
Right.
But I thought this one, some other cool stuff. They break down older and younger audience. Please go check it out because it's really fascinating that, I mean, as an example, Biden's ad spend. 84% of his Facebook advertising is going to everyone that is over 45. And then we've got Mr. Yang over here with the Yang Gang. 81% of his ads are going for 45 and under. So you can see like how they're strategizing and everything. And at some point, I'm hoping that some of these people that are spending evenly across the age demographics gets a digital campaign manager that knows how to run Facebook ads, because that's not going to get you results. I'm sorry.
Right. And you think, you know, in the Democratic primary, you always have to kind of run as a super liberal, and then general election, you run to the middle and you say, oh no, I'm the like centrist candidate, because you're trying to grab Republican votes. So I wonder, you know, right now they're spending, like you look at some people who are just spending where the liberal and Democratic votes are. When I'm thinking like, who can't, don't spend money on like super liberal women. They all are going to vote Democrat no matter what. Like they despise Trump. It's we've won that side of it. Go get all the 65 and older white guys, spend your money there. But they're trying to get in the next debate. So they're going to go for the easy win, which is people who are already, you know, heavily in the Democratic camp. But all right, that's enough about politics for today. My favorite website ever, Tumblr.
Ever. Wow.
Continue. Yeah, not really. I did have a Tumblr blog for a hot minute. And my nephew, who's like the cool, edgy nephew, who's like, you know, kind of into troubly things, always had a Tumblr blog. I should ask him if once I got rid of porn on Tumblr, if that's when he stopped using it. But Tumblr continued to tumble. So they were sold to Yahoo for around $1 billion a while ago in like 2013. And then never really did anything. Of course, Yahoo then got sold to Verizon, and Verizon has just been continuing to like sell the assets from that deal. Like, this stuff's not worth anything. And so then now Tumblr just got sold to WordPress for, they didn't say the number, but under 20 million is what's been reported. So I don't know. I think Tumblr and WordPress kind of make sense, because Tumblr is kind of like a mini site, and obviously WordPress is the largest like website builder or website platform in the world. So maybe the Tumblr folks will have a future at WordPress.
Yeah, this one was really interesting. I forgot it was still around. So yeah.
A little bit of inventory, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what you get.
But like 20 million. Like, you know, hey, I mean, you buy it for $1 billion. And I think the best one with all these articles was that Marissa Mayer quote of like, we will not like mess this up.
Oh man. It's like her, what's that guy? Steve Ballmer. It's like her Steve Ballmer moment about like, you know, no one's going to use a mobile phone and like, you need a pen, like all the boneheaded things that guy said about the future of mobile.
Oh man.
This so one confidently, hurts. These execs are just so confident in the future.
It hurts.
That would just be a great thing to do. Go back to all the great, quote unquote, great CEOs of the time and like play the clips of them making these outrageous statements that turned out to be like horribly false, but we just kind of move on.
I mean, speaking of that, I mean, do you think this could be it? I mean, Spectacles 3, do you think this could be one that we look back on in a couple of years, 5 to 10 years?
So the next story, Snapchat is going at it again with the third version of Spectacles. If anything, it's going to be me. You're going to, I mean, wildly successful CEO, of course I'll be one in the future, and you'll come back and listen to me in a former podcast rail against Spectacles 2 as a total waste of money and repeating the bad mistakes and the Snap stock tumbling and tumbling, tumbling. Well, they had a stock turnaround. Their stock's doing much better, and suddenly people like Snapchat, and they're like, F it, let's go for Spectacles 3. No one wants the first two, but we'll try again. So, you know, at 2, I said it's a total failure and it's distracting. At 3, I don't know. I guess I changed my mind a little bit. They're selling them for $380 instead of $150 to $200, which they sold the old ones for. And they're a little less gimmicky, so they're not waterproof and they're not like bright yellow and stuff like that. They have two cameras, so you can take 3D photos. And apparently from the people who use Snapchat, who talked about one article, it can post directly to Snapchat, which apparently the old Spectacles couldn't do. All they would do is basically put them on like a camera roll and you needed to like go on Snapchat and post them. So this version, you can just post directly to Snap. So maybe this is it. I'm all for innovation and I do think people should take risks. And now that Snap has stabilized and has some revenue, now's a good time. So Snap Spectacles 3, I'm on board. I'm on board with
on
it.
On board. Wow. Okay. Wow. On board. I'm going to take... Yeah, I'm not going to buy them. This one, I mean, at $380, I mean, that's so expensive, right? Think about, you could probably get like what, the new iPad for that or something, right?
Half of a Google Glass.
Half of a Google Glass.
Yeah, I do not think these are going to do well, especially with the demographic, because the one thing is the people who use Snapchat have gotten older. So like they're starting to have some money as they become like, you know, 25 to 35. So maybe they're going to spend some money on these things, but I don't know.
I
can't imagine.
I bet if Instagram came out with some and you could do stories from them, I think it would work. I don't know. I mean, it seems like stories are like super, super big. People like them. I still can't quite figure them out. But hey, you know, we can kind of move forward. I say wait and see on this one. I'm not going to say it's going to be a complete failure. I will say it seems like Spectacles 1 and 2 were a failure, although I love the marketing of Spectacles 1. But anyway, we can move on.
They had to write off, I forget how many million of unsold inventory of Spectacles sitting in their warehouse when they developed Spectacle 2. I'm guessing the same thing happened. They just warehouses filled with like this product nobody wants. So maybe they should work on their product development cycle. Maybe don't like order tons of them until you actually sell some. But stories, I'm surprised you're not on board with stories. I probably had a 3-month period where I was like 4 or 5 posts on a story. I think I started when I was traveling somewhere. And that's like a good time to do stories. And I kind of got into it, but I got over it. But stories are fun. I do check them pretty often on Instagram. And apparently if you want to get a lot of traffic to your stories, you can call your favorite election riggers the Russians. And the Russians can fill you up with stories, likes, and follows and views. TechCrunch did a great article about a bunch of people had reported that suddenly there's all these Russians watching their stories. And, you know, turns out people are paying for likes. And the way you get likes is, you know, they run a bunch of fake campaigns out of Russia that follow stories, and then those people follow them back and somehow get them to like your story and all that fun stuff. So not surprising.
Yeah. No, I liked this article. I like how they called it a perpetual game of whack-a-mole. And that's really what this is. It's like, you're like, okay, look, they're messing with this. They're doing this. Cool. Whack it. It's now gone. And then they sprout up over here doing something else. And anytime that you're incentivizing, you know, this kind of stuff, there's going to be fraud. I mean, we see this all the time with, I think we've reported before, like a $50 billion industry for ad fraud. So it's no real surprise here that there's fraud even with viewability and impressions and what's happening here. So good luck. Keep going.
Yeah, as usual, build a good audience, have great content, have authentic conversations on social media, and then you'll build an audience. If you try to buy it, it's not going to do anything for you. Although the one thing I will say is social proof does matter. So if you have an account that's got like, you know, if you have a Twitter account that has thousands of followers, it means more to people than one that has 400 or 40 followers. So maybe it's worth it. Maybe it's worth buying it. I mean, I shouldn't say that because I'll get, you know, in the doghouse with the networks, because if they find out you're buying, you know, audiences, usually you're supposed to be in hot water, but seems like they can't figure that out. But I would say don't buy an audience. That social proof is worthless if it's a bunch of bots.
Yeah.
And there was more spam. I'll just throw out real quick. Google Play, again, back in March, we talked about there were some, you know, apps that had, I don't remember what it was. They were spamming you somehow. They were like running something in the background that was, you know, clicking on a bunch of ads. And there's like hundreds of these apps. I think it was the one that like bought, you know, like old apps that had a little bit of usage, and they snuck some malware in there that like ran ads, and then Google took those down. And then just recently another one where, and this was really clever, I just tweeted about this. What it does is when you install this app, which is like a game, and there's like maybe 30 different games, you couldn't remove, and it was photo filters, it was a bunch of stuff, the normal stuff, photo filters, games, flashlights. In the background it ran ads, also in the foreground it did full page takeovers, but to the app icon on your, you know, phone, it deleted it and changed the app icon into a shortcut icon. So it looked like the app icon. So when you're like, oh man, this thing keeps like playing ads, and you go to, you know, swipe the icon into the little uninstall bucket, well, what you're really doing is just uninstalling the shortcut. And then it like would lie dormant for a little bit and you forget about it. And then it's still running ads either in the background or popping up ads again, and you can't uninstall it. And people like railed against it. So it had a ton of negative reviews, but still some people download a 1-star game that says it's filled with ads. But anyway, long story short, if you have a phone and you're trying to find a decent app on Android, you know, read the reviews, but there's tons of malware obviously still out there. And the last thing is, I don't understand how, I think it was one of the like security firms kind of brought up this story. So it seems like they're much better at catching this stuff. I think it was Trend Micro caught this instead of Google catching it. And even like with AdStage, we get probably 4 or 5 spam signups every day. We sign up free trialers. Every day we get like 4 or 5. They're clearly fake. You can just look at it and be like, that's fake in 2 seconds. Because you could tell the structure of the email is the same. Their behavior is the same. I can figure it out. I'm not a smart guy. I just look at it. Like Google can't figure that out and do something about it when there's like obvious spam. And I don't know why these people are spamming us, what they're going to do with their AdStage free trial. But I do know why. It's because some website has Google ads on it and they get paid when a conversion happens. So somebody's making fake conversions. So some website gets credit for these conversions. So I don't know why Google can't figure that out, if I could figure it out. But all right, end of rant. Let's talk about the movies.
The movies. Facebook coming out with launching 2 new ad units designed to help movie studios promote their latest releases. Fantastic idea, in my opinion. Like, talk about money generating, right? I think we see this a lot now. They're going like very vertical specific with new ad units. So we've seen this with auto, and then we've seen this now with movies coming into play as well. So now when you got a big release coming up, you can now start promoting this and start their marketing months in advance, even years, which years might be a little bit much, but it's ultimately going to help push people to, you know, attend your movie. And so these new ad features, you can get showtimes button, which I think is really interesting. For like nearby show times, and you can also like purchase tickets directly from Facebook as well. So if you're like me, I just go to Google, I type in the movie, because it usually when I want to see a movie, it's within probably a 3-day window. I'm like, right, Thursday planning for Saturday, right? Or that day I'm planning to go to like a matinee, right? So I think it could be good for Facebook.
You're getting old, going to matinees.
Dude, it's cheaper.
Oh, sounding older by the second. And if you go to dinner at 5:30, you know, to get the blue light special, blue plate special.
Yeah, man, you got to. You got to get in there, get home by 7. It's the winter.
Right. Get the book, curl up, go to bed. And I did. We didn't put the story here, but I saw that Disney just moved to Google for all their like ad serving. So they just like, they used to use Verizon or something like that, and they moved to Google. But because I was thinking the people who really use this are going to be like the big networks, right? They spend a ton of money on releases. So this is great for like Disney. And it reminded me, they just got fully into the Google stack. So interesting that like Disney's going deep into Google tech. But, and then a few other stories we can kind of breeze through. I know you got a baby that's waking up at some point that you got to go deal with. Twitter's going to have a DM filter. So if you're getting obnoxious DMs, they'll go to a different tab so you don't have to stare at them. No one DMs me other than you. So I get a few here and there, so this won't affect me personally. But
Paul, look at this article. That's right. Did you see this?
Right. Let's talk about this on Friday. Yeah, I mean, most of my DMs are all PPC chat folks, but I'm also a white guy. I think women on Twitter get way more abuse. People feel like they can, you know, just be total pigs to strangers when they're anonymous. So they have a DM filter, hopefully to address some of that. Share chat, just putting on everybody's radar. So Twitter invested $100 million in a social media / messenger app called Share Chat. It's in India. It's actually been around since 2014, but I thought it was interesting because you're starting to see this trend where Google, Facebook, you know, the big players aren't doing super well in other countries. And instead of launching there, they're kind of partnering or investing in native apps. And Share Chat specifically is not in English. So kind of their big thing is, you know, kind of counter English. So only 1.5% of the population of India, according to this article, speak English fluently. But 500 million people, I forget the percentage. I think there's around 1 billion people in India. So 5% speak Hindi. because, you know, in India they speak like 500 different languages, but this is like a Hindi based, no English. This is for you, India. And they're doing really well. And they've survived kind of over the last 5 years. So at some point, if you're a global brand, you might have to think about a regional strategy where you got Weibo and
Quora. Got Quora.
Oh yeah, Quora India is huge, right?
Yeah, it's our fastest growing market right now. Roughly 70 million people.
Why is that? Like, I mean, obviously it's English speaking, but UK, Canada, like, you know, for AdSage, we have a bunch of just Australia, UK folks because they speak English and it's easy to support them. But India does too. It's English speaking, but as I just mentioned, not even close to the majority of the population. So why do you think Quora's India market is doing so well?
I mean, we also launched into Hindi. We launched Hindi as well. So we have Hindi and we have English. So it kind of depends on what they want to interact with. But launching Hindi is what exponential growth. That, and they just really like it. I think there's a lot of like long tail questions that they're asking. A lot of people are using it for education. They really see their knowledge as a way to get out of where they are. And so a lot of people use Quora to learn and to get help better themselves to get out of their situation. So it's kind of cool. Those are some of the stories that we've heard.
Two other stories. One, LinkedIn introduced an API. They've been working on this API for like 3 years, but it went public a few days ago. I forget the name of it. It's like the Audience Engagement API, I believe. I didn't copy and paste the full name here. But, you know, we've been talking to them for a while because we're partners, and they were pitching it as kind of to figure out topics that are trending, what news articles appeal to your audience, really to help you refine your content. So for us, it was a little too content-y. It was all about like, here's what people are interested in. Here's the articles people are reading. Here's the topics that the audience is like. And it wasn't, for us, it was hard to tie it to like how you would do audience targeting. They're adding more of that in, but that went live, and there's a bunch of partners, mostly on the content side, that are handling that, like the Sprinklers of the world and some of the big agencies, like Omnicom is doing something with it. So that, and then the last story, unless you want to comment on, oh, the clean rooms. Oh, I forgot about the clean rooms. Okay, you need just two more minutes before your baby is like, Daddy, I want you.
Yeah, he is up, so. We can do clean rooms and then I gotta take off.
We'll shut it down then. So, you know, with LinkedIn launching this API, it was all about how do you get audience data, but it's anonymized. There's no like email level information available in their API, as opposed to, you know, Facebook and Google. Google has a product and Facebook has a product where you can actually like share your email addresses, but it's like a secret product that only the big brands have access to. And Facebook calls it a clean room. You can get access to a Facebook clean room. And literally you go to Facebook with your data set in your hand, physically, you connect it to a computer that has never touched the internet. And then Facebook runs your email list against their data set and then gives you quote unquote insights back. And then you're not allowed to remove the data. Then that data now lives in Facebook and you can use it, you know, I assume to do audience targeting, and you could use it as part of your attribution algorithms. But it just, I want to do that. I want to go to Facebook with a little like thumb drive and be in a room with a computer isolated from the internet. It all sounds so like spy movie. I don't know. It's pretty crazy.
I know, I had never heard of this, especially for attribution modeling, but it's super fascinating. So two brand new computers that have never touched the internet, and then they have to have the data, and then they share their data without any bias or influence. And then you can use this to either for your proprietary attribution modeling or to get this insight. So the real thing with this one too is really interesting. I thought just weirdness around the clean room, but also is also showing that Facebook is willing to give this information to media buyers. But again, you have to be a certain media buyer, I'm sure, with a certain spend. But I thought that was really interesting because Facebook normally doesn't do that and doesn't do it for everyone. That's for sure.
Yeah. So now Facebook, Google both do this. And I mean, they have individual user level data. They mentioned it's impression level data. So this is the like secret sauce. This is really their best data. You can get access to it. LinkedIn, of course, is selling theirs as the opposite, saying, hey, we're into privacy, so we're not going to let you show up with a thumb drive and basically ask us for the inside scoop on all our users. So whether it's because they can't do it or they don't want to do it, I don't know. But LinkedIn is definitely pushing the LinkedIn / Microsoft privacy angle. All right. Well, let's end it there, my friend. Go take care of little Jude. If folks want more articles, they could always head over to blog.adstage.io and sign up. So have a great week.
See you guys.